Hello, everyone, and welcome to Therapy in a Nutshell. I'm Emma McAdam, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and this is the podcast where I condense mental health skills into bite-sized nuggets of help. If you're ready to learn more in-depth mental health skills, check out my online courses on anxiety, coping skills, and how to change your brain, 10 alternatives to medication to improve mental health. The link is in the description. You can use the code NUTSHELL for 25% off. Okay, back to the show.
In this episode, I interview Joy Romani about her wide-ranging experiences as a yoga enthusiast, a vestibular audiologist, and a neuroplasticity expert. And in this edited version of our long interview, we highlight how she teaches people to deal with the uncomfortable symptoms of tinnitus, vertigo, and anxiety by leaning into their body's sensations, making space for those uncomfortable feelings, and learning to make peace with what's going on inside of your body. I think you're gonna love this interview. If you'd like to hear the full-length interview that goes through this wide-ranging conversation about neuroplasticity, how to change your brain, and how that relates specifically to tinnitus and vertigo, check out the extended version in my podcast. Hello, everyone. Today, I am really excited to share with you a very special guest. Her name is Joy Romani, and she is a specialist with tinnitus and vertigo and dizziness. And one of the things that I really love about her is she provides this step-by-step approach to learning how you can use neuroplasticity to heal your body and to use your body's own natural wisdom. So thank you so much, Joy. Thank you for joining us.
It's so great to be here. So hello from Australia. I've kind of become a specialist in how to implement neuroplasticity and the education around getting people to understand, what do I feel right now in my present body? And this could be really uncomfortable sounds and sensations that I don't want to hear or feel. And so my clients are uncomfortable. They're often anxious about it. They're often feeling helpless, hopeless, powerless, being told there's no cure, being told they've got to live with it, or they're spending lots of money on generic prescribed home exercises, diets, supplements, medications, devices. And so they're over it. And my specialty has been to teach them how to say, okay, well, what am I noticing and feeling and sensing, both emotionally and in my symptomatology? How can I support that physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, and meet it and let my brain really process that data calmly and quietly? And then what do I want to feel? Not what don't I want to feel, which we can talk about. That's a trap. What do I want to feel? Let's say I want to feel peace and courage. Mm-hmm. What can I do? How can I cultivate my neural patterns of feeling inner peace and feeling courageous? So how can I move from A to B, from what I'm feeling now to where I want to feel? Neuroplasticity is closing that gap. And there's an education component of learning how to do that. Mm-hmm. Because, of course, as Joy Romani, the expert, I don't know what you feel right now, and I don't know what you want to feel right now, and I don't know how you close that gap. All of that is a personal self-study inquiry that involves a willingness and a humility and a kindness and compassion from the person going through it. Doesn't matter how expert I am, the person going through the healing has to take those steps.
Yeah. So you work with people to foster their innate healing capabilities, their deep wisdom, to really lean in to these sensations or these uncomfortable situations and to get where they want to get.
And like one of the most important parts of healing it is not trying to get rid of it anymore and not caring if it's there or not. And that really for me is the ultimate sign that someone has healed, is whether these sensations come or go. A, they don't call them symptoms anymore. They become very welcome passing sensations that just add color and variety to a person's lived experience. So they're no longer seen as abnormal. Mm-hmm. And whether they come or go or not is not a concern or a worry. We're not looking for them. We're not searching for them. We're not trying to get rid of them. It really is just I'm allowing myself to meet myself in my full humanness. And that sometimes means my ugly, icky, sticky, messy bits. I'm willing to feel that without judgment. Mm-hmm. And I'm also open to my orgasmic, blissful, joyful, pleasurable bits. So I'm not numbing, I'm not cherry picking the nice bits and then numbing, denying, distracting, medicating the nasty bits. I'm actually open to the full human spectrum, which I cover in my book, because I feel like that is such an important conversation for all modern humans.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And we need to learn how to feel again, because often we're just taught to pucker up and smile and don't cry and don't whinge and don't just get on with it, push through.
Just feel happy. You should feel happy all the time or whatever, right? Yeah.
And that doesn't work, because from a neuroplasticity perspective, in fact, I share this example in my book of having chronic sadness. And I won't call it depression, because it was a chronic sadness after my brother broke his neck skiing. He became a quadriplegic. Mm-hmm. And it was 4 years of me being cheerful and strong for my family and having a neuroplasticity background, you know, really being a bit of a coach for my brother, saying, don't listen to the doctors. You know, we don't know your outcomes. We don't know what your body's capable of. Mm-hmm. And he has since really surprised people with what he's capable of doing with his spinal injury.
Yeah.
He seemed to get acceptance and get his sense of self back quicker than I did. He was dating, he was getting married, he was studying. 4 years down, I was like struggling to eat. I was just so, my inner world was a mess. I had suppressed all of my feelings of sadness, pretended I was happy, and told myself, well, I've got working arms and legs, so I should be happy, right? I should just get on with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it got to this point where like I just kind of couldn't eat anymore. Like I was just completely like this on the inside. Mm-hmm. And my inner wisdom finally came through and was like, Joey, you're allowed to be sad. Your brother's never going to be the same again. You've never let this sadness be felt and processed. And now you've like got this overlog of sadness neurochemicals floating around your body. And you have to do something with them. You've got to feel them. Feel them as long as it takes. Like let yourself cry. Let yourself go there. And I just kind of let all the feeling of sadness come through me with this deep compassion and acceptance and like reality.
Mm-hmm.
And the interesting thing was, is it passed really quickly. Like once I let it pass, it was like this miraculous, like, poof. And then like, I felt myself come home. It was like a big, huge software update on a computer.
Mm-hmm.
And so what I'm saying here is we can't suppress feelings forever. A little bit's fine and it's kind of neuroprotective, but in the long run, we have to actually update ourselves with our present reality, feel what we need to feel, let those brain chemicals flush and move. Because at the end of sadness often comes relief. And we can't feel that relief and that joy and love and connection or compassion unless we feel the sadness. We can't skip the sadness, right?
No one wants to feel anxiety or sadness or depression or whatever it is. But when we resist or compress or suppress those thoughts, it tends to make them worse and they get stuck in us. And there's something about feeling them fully and embracing them that lets them move through you much of the time, right?
Yeah. And I talk about this in the book, because when we resist them, we're actually telling the brain. So we're basically the CEO of our inner world. So what we need to do when we take control and take power back of our inner world, we need to actually teach the brain that those tinnitus noises or those sadness feelings or those vertigo and dizziness feelings or anxiety feelings, they're all normal and safe. They're false alarms. They're not true life-threatening situations or triggers. When we resist something and put emotional allocation into it, which is often fear and hatred, the brain responds by going, you're super into that, so I'll give it more neural energy.
Mm-hmm.
And if we reverse that to it's no big deal, whatever, I'm super neutral about it, I have no emotion attached to it, the brain's like, meh, she's not interested, so I'm not going to put more neural activity there. I'll put more neural activity to where Joey's focusing, which might be connecting to her friends and creating a new band. She wants to make a new band, so I'm going to start putting all my neural emphasis onto finding musicians.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like we teach our brain what to emphasize and what to make louder. And that, I often say to my OCD clients, use it. Like having an obsessive compulsive tendency can be used for incredibly helpful outcomes if we start focusing obsessively on calm or peace or love or connection, whatever is your new normal, which is the title of the last chapter in my book. We're moving towards building a new normal. That's where we want to go.
Yeah.
If I know my new normal is to feel relaxed in my body, to feel at peace in myself, to feel emotional regulation, we can obsess over that and make that our focus, and your brain will actually respond. It will give you more of that because that's what you're focusing on.
How do you take, if you've been feeling sad or if you've been feeling depressed or if you've been really hyper-focusing on your tinnitus, like how do you practically in like one example shift from focusing on the negative to that brain that you want?
Well, because a lot of it's coming through the body, it's actually a sensory discomfort.
Mm.
The solution comes through the body too. So to start with, it's about body scanning, which is the core basic yoga practice of noticing, sensing, and feeling without judgment, with curiosity, being present in the body, and learning to accept the sensations that come and go without judgment, which means we're no longer moving into that avoidance or craving. We're just saying, oh, okay, welcome tinnitus, and welcome sticky armpit, and welcome clammy hands, and welcome pumping heart, and oh, that's nice, I can feel my heels on the floor. And oh, now I'm connecting to my sitting bones on the chair. And now I can feel the wall against my back. It's kind of a nice feeling. So what happens here is we're staying in the body. We're not abandoning the body. And we're actually teaching the brain, all right, these dizzy and tinnitus signals and these anxiety signals are not everything. They're actually 1/1,000,000th of my experience right now, because I also have this tingling sensation on my hair follicles. And I also have a lovely sense of touch on my fingertips. And et cetera, and so on. So we get better at noticing more of what's in the body without overemphasizing what we don't want. We become more open to feeling and sensing, right? So the solution in the uncomfortable body sensations is going into the body and trying to find ways to connect in a calm, emotionally neutral or emotionally loving way, which totally transforms the brain chemistry that is released. If we're in the body and hating it and resisting it, we get the stress cortisols and the brain chemistry is of the fight, flight, freeze category. If we're in the body as more of a conscious, self-loving, self-kindness practice, which is where the rock steady process starts, you get the neurochemicals of compassion and kindness and curiosity and openness. And one of my strategies for moving through panic attack is put the kettle on and just notice how long it lasts. Just, you know, stay with it.
Curious. I wonder what it feels like to have a panic attack. Oh, weird. My heart is pounding really fast. Oh, this feels interesting. Let's see how long this goes, like that.
Totally. Yeah. And I actually did that when I was in my late 20s, before I had any of that psychology training. And it wasn't until I got the psychology training, I was like, oh, that's exactly what I did. Like, that's the yoga response. It's just observe it, stay with it. Like, part of you is going to be freaking out, quite rightly, and the other part of you is this wise witness holding space for the freak out. It's like sometimes no action is the best action.
That's right. Yeah. Don't just do something, sit there, right?
and bring full loving kindness, compassion, and presence to that, because that's where the brain can actually start going, something's not quite right, which is true. Something's not quite right. And then rather than suppress, deny, distract all of that data, the brain can actually use it and go, okay, I think I'm going to go over here and I'm going to put more effort over here in this relaxation quadrant, because that seems to be the best decision right now. Because it's looking at all of the data, not just the freak out. I would say, so step one is observation and noticing. Notice what else there is.
So step one to dealing with uncomfortable sensations. Is that what you're talking about?
Which includes anxiety. That is an uncomfortable sensation as well. But any sensation, we don't even need to label it, just to welcome and notice it in. Step two would be, how can I support these sensations I'm feeling? Okay. So take self-responsibility for the fact that your body is screaming for support. Okay. It's not happy. Something's not quite right. I call it the NQRs.
Yes.
And there will be a reason for that. And it could be like a misunderstanding. In this moment, your body is telling you, I'm not good enough. I'm completely unworthy. I'm ashamed of who I am. Now, you as an adult who's in control of your inner world could notice that and go, oh my God, darling, that is a misunderstanding. Where did you learn that? What memory comes to you when you think you're not good enough? What are you ashamed of? Like, have the conversation with yourself and kind of set the story straight. And this is where some of that inner child work and deeper self-compassion that's really authentic, instead of just like looking in the mirror and, oh, I love you.
Right.
You know, you're like, we want to go deeper. So it's like, actually listen to the dialogue, get that voice to be heard and meet it. And if part of you is like, I'm not worthy, having that dialogue and that new relationship to yourself, where part of you might be vulnerable and young and hurt and afraid, and part of you is the older, wiser spirit or soul that can can kind of parent or be the therapist or be the coach or be the friend, that dialogue can be game changing, because it doesn't matter where we are, who we're with, we're never alone, we've always got support, and actually we know what we need, because I know my inner voices and I know what my inner selves need to hear, right? So there's that whole inner process that often gets skipped over. And the reason I say that is because we can't necessarily go, okay, I'm feeling anxious, I don't want to feel that, I just want to feel joy, so I'm just going to go hang out with a friend. We actually end up suppressing the anxiety, trying to bunny hop over to feeling good all the time and never really processing that NQR thing. So we just keep cycling. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So if I, let me make sure I'm understanding this, because what you're saying is first, like, scan and notice, what am I noticing? And then when you start to feel something that's not quite right, which I like that term, when you start to feel something that's not quite right, you say, you know what, instead of saying, oh my gosh, my body's broken, why do I feel this way? What's the matter with me? You say, oh, I wonder if this is kind of an indicator. I wonder if this anxiety is telling me something's not quite right in my spiritual world or in my emotional or mental world. So it might be like, oh, a sense of shame. So you notice, oh, I'm feeling this discomfort. I wonder if there's something not quite right. And then when you find that, you can start to heal it or address it with this voice of gentleness and this voice of wisdom that comes from the divine.
And you'd be amazed at how many points along that little path where you can get tripped up. A couple of those trip ups are wanting to know why.
Oh my gosh. I just spent an hour in therapy with someone who's like, why? Right. But I do the same thing too, right? It's so fun to analyze instead of like be with, right?
Yeah. So wanting to know, why do I have the tinnitus? Why do I have the anxiety? Why do I feel the shame? Mm-hmm. It doesn't actually matter why. If you have a really poignant point in time, like, you know, let's say you fell off the monkey bars as a kid and then you were bullied and it was just like a really strong memory, you can talk to that and you can help that little part of you heal. Mm-hmm. But to be endlessly needing to know a why, and why am I diagnosed this way, and why did a doctor tell me that, and why hasn't anyone else healed me, and why do I have to do this, and why can't somebody else do this for me, that is likely to keep you extremely stuck.
Yep.
And to be painful and expensive. So what I shift this to is how. So mm-hmm. I'm body scanning, I'm noticing, I'm showing up in real time to what neurons are firing. Mm-hmm. Shift the question to, if something's not quite right now, and often we don't know what that is until hindsight, to be honest. In the moment, often we're not sure what it is mm-hmm. or why it's there. So the question is, how can I support this feeling right now? I'm feeling something, I'm sensing something. Let's say it's really sharp in my left shoulder. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of a painful ache and pain. And it's, if I were to describe it, it's like blue and ice and sharp and, it's hideous, right? Mm-hmm. How can I support that? Can I breathe into it? Can I talk to it? Can I ask it, what are you doing here? What do you need from me? What's your message for me, body? What do you, to have the conversation of how can I support you? Mm-hmm. How, what do you need from me in this moment? And be really open intuitively to what comes up. And then what often happens both in myself and with my clients is there's a natural evolution of the next feeling, the next conversation. So whatever we started with will often soften and release if we give it time and we breathe through it. You don't have to problem solve it, but more stay with it, support it. You take as long as you take. That's a good one for me if I'm feeling really angsty.
Yep.
Just feel this way for as long as you want to feel. I'm here with you, Joey. There's no rush. It's all perfectly fine. And when I hear that message, you're allowed to feel this way. Just take as long as you need. I feel like my body goes,
You have like these written down on a piece of paper, because I feel like if we all had like a sheet of paper that's like, it's like, what do you need right now, feeling, you know, it's okay, take as long as you need. And we just like in an emotional crisis just like read through that list. You know, yeah. I feel like I could use something like that.
Yeah. It's also good, I encourage people to find that conversation that works for you. So I feel like being highly anxious and myself,
yeah,
and also highly judgmental and highly critical and probably perfectionist, I've had to do a lot of work of figuring out how to accept my humanness and show up with compassion in moments when I'm mean to myself and you know, all of this. And so with a lot of practice, I've figured out kind of what works for me. And that doesn't mean I don't have difficult days. I do. And, you know, doing things like launching a book is highly triggering. And there are days when I have sad days.
So as I listen to you speak, and I think of someone who's listening to this with a fresh perspective, and they're like, okay, so what I'm supposed to do, I have these uncomfortable sensations of sadness or these, you know, uncomfortable emotions or tinnitus or vertigo or dizziness. I'm supposed to notice them and scan, increase my awareness, see what else is there, pay a little bit more attention to the things I want in my life than the things I don't want in my life.
That's a sensory want. So what desired sensations do I want? Not like, do I want a new race car?
I want to be grounded.
Okay, so I'm going to focus on sensations that feel grounded, just clarifying that.
Okay, so what are the desired sensations? And then practicing kind of just allowing. Because like for someone who's like you, who's been practicing this for so long, you probably are quite skilled at allowing uncomfortable sensations to come in. But for someone who's trying this for the first time, they're like, what are you talking about? How does one allow oneself to experience something really uncomfortable like tinnitus? You know, how does one lean into that without judging it as bad when it's uncomfortable?
I can tell you it's a lot easier than people think, because fighting what we feel. So basically tinnitus, dizziness, anxiety, sadness, whatever, they're all unwanted sensations, sensations and feelings. It's all the same. Mm-hmm. And basically emotions create sensations and sensations create emotions. So they're actually interconnected.
Yeah.
And because they're inside of us, we can't run away. So it's like, if I don't like the dog barking over there, I can just remove myself from the dog, right? Yep. That strategy doesn't exist when it's inside of us.
Yep.
So we end up living in this inner war zone, which is totally exhausting. It's very expensive.
Mm-hmm.
And what happens with time when we go through enough inner conflict and pain? So I have a free body scan that's available on my website.
And I've listened to it and it's great.
So when people go there and try that, which is it's 10 minutes, you know, for some people that's really challenging, and they take 3 months to be able to actually do that body scan because there's so much inner criticism and resistance, right?
Yeah.
But stick with it, because I think when we're ready, which basically means the pain of living in my body and resisting it outweighs the pain of learning to be non-judgmental and to sit with and not abandon what I'm feeling. It actually becomes easier to stay with the sensations without the fight and go, huh, that's actually not as bad as I thought it would be. It's like it becomes less energy consuming to just stay with it and notice and not do anything about it than to stay with it and judge it and fight it and be in that inner conflict war zone. So I would suggest it's a readiness. And if you guys listening out there are just like, hell no, there is no way I'm closing my eyes and feeling my body, that's totally fine. Just try tomorrow. Like the readiness can come. And actually that's with my book. A huge piece is education. And a lot of people will go through my book still feeling a bit skeptical and not ready. But there'll come a time when you're like, you know what? I'm so ready now to explore my neurons and my brain. Mm-hmm. And I'm tired of waiting for someone else to fix me. I'm ready. Like it comes like that. And there's no rush. There's no judgment from my part. It took me personally 4 years to do it, which is, you know, a decent amount of time for a young person.
Oh yeah. Feels like forever when you're little or something. Yeah.
Yeah. And I wasn't ready to heal. I wanted someone else to fix me.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think what I want to say with that, why would I go and feel difficult things in my body? And I think the reason we pause and feel difficult things in our body or hear difficult things in our body and bring a new, fresh approach of loving kindness, of openness, of curiosity. I very rarely use the term acceptance because I think it's often twisted into toleration, which is so super not what we want.
Yep.
So it's this allowing, it's this openness, it's this childlike awe. And, you know, it becomes easier to get curious and to be present without judgment than being in that old familiar pattern of fight, flight, freeze all the time.
Mm-hmm.
Shifting from that to curiosity and presence can take quite a lot of education and support, but it can be done. And it can be, I have clients heal in weeks, if not months. Some of them take years, but it doesn't matter, they heal. And there is no rush. And if we think about the complex tapestry of physical, mental, emotional, and spiritual undertones, you know, some people can sort that out quickly.
Mm-hmm.
and feel like they're their best friend and they're on top of the world. Other people take a very long time to discover self-compassion. There is so much in the way of them learning to feel that they can receive that level of deep support and reassurance from themselves. They feel so inadequate and so deeply hurt and ashamed that self-compassion can take a very long time to cultivate, generate, and receive.
But
it can still happen. And that you've got to keep believing and, never compare yourself to other people.
Right. Yeah, that makes so much sense to me. And I can feel like I'm just in this beginning journey as far as self-compassion goes. I'm like starting to learn it and starting to practice it. And there are some areas I can do it well, and other areas I'm like not quite ready like to do it yet. And I'm in the process of being gentle. So, and I don't mean to share this as a way like, oh, I have this all figured out. But like I made a video once when someone who I cared about had passed away, and I was really emotional in the moment. And in that moment, I was able to be like gentle with those emotions and just accept that I was really sad and move through that, and then get back to doing what I was doing. And within a few minutes, like that intensity of emotion had just passed through. And yeah, it wasn't like my parent had died. I mean, it was someone who I cared about a lot. But other situations, like even just getting some criticism from my husband, like not like he's being mean, like, oh, hey, Emma, this thing that you're doing makes it a little hard for us. And like for me, be like, no, I have to be like the perfect wife. I can't ever like... like harm my husband in any way, like just like not able yet to accept like that humanness yet. Like still working on that one.
I think it's lifelong. I mean, having a baby and publishing a book within a 9-month period has been very awakening.
I bet.
And I've experienced so many highs, like the hormonal highs and bliss of birth and motherhood, but then also the challenges of, you know, the pressure of my career and being there for my community, feeling an ethical responsibility to write this book. So it's been really confronting, and a lot of fears of, you know, am I worthy? Will I get hate mail? Will people hate me?
Yes.
You know, the visibility, all of that. And I've had to kind of pause a number of times and just be like, this is an opportunity for me to lean in again and to clear through another layer of that inner gunk that's holding me back from my light and my truth.
Yeah.
And it takes as long as it takes. And I'm always sharing with my audience my icky bits and my sticky bits and how I support myself through it, because that's the important piece. It's not dramatizing the difficult days. It's saying, well, actually, I had this difficult day. I had no idea what it was about. It was really confusing. It was awful. Every part of me felt yuck. This is how I supported myself. My intention in writing this book is actually to get this message out to doctors and audiologists and psychologists and physical therapists, etc. Because we need to be having this conversation that we don't need a cure. Okay, that's not the right conversation. We need to teach people how to change their brain, why the brain can get stuck, why they can be stuck with symptoms for life. Absolutely, you can be stuck for life if you're never taught how to reverse it or how to unlock it, how to break the symptom loop. So I think it's important people don't feel hopeless and helpless. There's a lot you can do to support yourself, support your body. This book is the game changer. It's the conversation starter.
Everything I've read is just resonating with me. Like, people need to understand this in this context of like how to stop fighting your body and how to listen to your inner wisdom and how to believe in your ability to create change within yourself and within your body and within, I mean, especially reversing those cycles of being so stuck. I think it's really valuable. I'm so glad you challenged your own, you know, sense of like, oh, I don't know if I should put myself out there, and did it anyway. That's awesome. Well, yeah, your website's just full of resources. So it's such a great thing to put out there for people. So
yeah,
really appreciate that. Hopefully we can talk again sometime soon.
Yeah, totally.
Cool. Well, thank you so much. Take care.
Bye for now.
This podcast was adapted from a YouTube video from my YouTube channel, Therapy in a Nutshell. So if you'd like to see more of my videos, check that out and go subscribe on YouTube. Also, you can sign up for my newsletter at www.therapynutshell.com. Thanks for watching. Thank you for listening, and take care.